Chapter 2. Violet took one last look over the misty peak, and then reached down to put on one of the heavy coats she had taken from the caravan. "Take one of these coats," she said to her brother. "It's cold out here, and it's likely to get even colder. The headquarters is supposed to be very high up in the mountains. By the time we get there, we'll probably be wearing every stitch of this clothing." "But how are we going to get there?" Klaus said. "We're nowhere near the Valley of Four Drafts, and the caravan is destroyed." "Let's take a moment to see what we have," Violet said. "I might be able to construct something from the items we managed to take." "I hope so," Klaus said. "Sunny is getting farther and farther away. We'll never catch up with her without some sort of vehicle." Klaus spread out the items from the caravan and put on one of the coats, while Violet picked through her pile. But instantly the two Baudelaires saw that a vehicle was not in the realm of possibility, a phrase which here means could not be made from a few small objects and some articles of clothing previously belonging to carnival employees. Violet tied her hair up in a ribbon again and frowned down on the few items they had managed to save. In Klaus's pile, there was the pitcher, still sticky from the substance he had used to slow down the caravan wheels, as well as Colette's hand mirror, a wool poncho, and a sweatshirt which read Caligari Carnival. In Violet's pile was the large bread knife, the ukulele, and one more coat. Even Klaus, who was not as mechanically minded as his sister, knew that the materials gathered on the ground were not enough to make something that could take the two children through the Mortmain Mountains. "I suppose I could make a spark by rubbing two rocks together," Violet said, looking around the misty countryside for additional inventing materials. "Or we could play the ukulele and bang on the pitcher. A loud noise might attract some help." "But who would hear it?" Klaus said, gazing at the gloomy mist. "We didn't see a sign of anyone else when we were in the caravan. The way through the Mortmain Mountains is like a poem I read once about the road less travelled." "Did the poem have a happy ending?" Violet asked. "It was neither happy nor unhappy," Klaus said. "It was ambiguous." "Well, let's gather up these materials and take them with us." "Take them with us?" Violet said. "We don't know where to go, and we don't know how to get there." "Sure we do," Klaus said. "The stricken stream starts at a source high in the mountains and winds its way down through the Valley of Four Drafts, where the headquarters are. It's probably not the quickest or easiest way to get there, but if we follow the stream up the mountains, it will take us where we want to go." "But that could take days," Violet said. "We don't have a map, or any food or water for the journey, or tents, or sleeping bags, or any other camping equipment." "We can use all this clothing as blankets," Klaus said, "and we can sleep in any shelter we find. There are quite a few caves on the map that animals use for hibernation." The two Baudelaires looked at one another and shivered in the chilly breeze. The idea of hiking for hours in the mountains, only to sleep wrapped in someone else's clothing in a cave that might contain hibernating animals, was not a pleasant one, and the siblings wished they did not have to take the road less travelled, but instead could travel in a swift, well-heated vehicle and reach their sister in mere moments. But wishing, like sipping a glass of punch, or pulling aside a bearskin rug in order to access a hidden trapdoor in the floor, is merely a quiet way to spend one's time before the candles are extinguished on one's birthday cake, and the Baudelaires knew that it would be best to stop wishing and start their journey. Klaus put the hand mirror and the ukulele in his coat pockets and picked up the poncho and the pitcher, while Violet put the bread knife in her pocket and picked up the sweatshirt and the last coat, and then, with one last look at the tracks the caravan left behind as it toppled over the peak, the two children began to follow the stricken stream. If you have ever travelled a long distance with a family member, then you know that there are times when you feel like talking and times when you feel like being quiet. This was one of the quiet times. Violet and Klaus walked up the slopes of the mountain toward the headquarters they hoped to reach, and they heard the sound of the mountain winds, a low, tuneless moan, like someone blowing across the top of an empty bottle, and the odd, rough sound of the stream's fish as they stuck their heads out of the dark, thick waters of the stream. But both travellers were in a quiet mood and did not say a word to one another, each lost in their own thoughts. Violet let her mind wander to the time she had spent with her siblings in the village of foul devotees, when a mysterious man named Jacques Snicket was murdered and the children were blamed for the crime. They had managed to escape from prison and rescue their friends Duncan and Isadora Quagmire from Count Olaf's clutches, but then had been separated at the last moment from the two triplets, who sailed away in a self-sustaining hot-air mobile home built by a man named Hector. None of the Baudelaires had seen Hector or the two Quagmires since, and Violet wondered if they were safe and if they had managed to contact a secret organization they'd discovered. The organization was called VFD, and the Baudelaires had not yet learned exactly what the organization did, or even what all the letters stood for. The children thought that the headquarters at the Valley of Four Drafts might prove to be helpful, but now, as the eldest Baudelaire trudged alongside the stricken stream, she wondered if she would ever find the answers she was looking for. Klaus was also thinking about the Quagmires, although he was thinking about when the Baudelaires first met them at Prufrock Preparatory School. Many of the students at the school had been quite mean to the three siblings, particularly a very nasty girl named Carmelita Spatz. But Isadora and Duncan had been very kind, and soon the Baudelaires and the Quagmires had become inseparable, a word which here means close friends. One reason for their friendship had been that both sets of children had lost people who were close to them. The Baudelaires had lost their parents, of course, and the Quagmires had lost not only their parents, but their brother, the third Quagmire triplet, whose name was Quigley. Klaus thought about the Quagmires' tragedy, and felt a little guilty that one of his own parents might be alive after all. A document the Baudelaires had found contained a picture of their parents standing with Jacques Snicket and another man, with a caption reading, "Because of the evidence discussed on page 9, experts now suspect that there may in fact be one survivor of the fire, but the survivor's whereabouts are unknown." Klaus had this document in his pocket right now, along with a few scraps of the Quagmire's notebooks that they had managed to give him. Klaus walked beside his older sister, thinking of the puzzle of VFD and how kindly the Quagmires had tried to help them solve the mystery that surrounded them all. He was thinking so hard about these things that when Violet finally broke the silence, it was as if he were waking up from a long, confusing dream. "Klaus," she said, "when we were in the caravan, you said you wanted to tell me something before we tried the invention, but I didn't let you. What was it?"
"I don't know," Klaus admitted. "I just wanted to say something, in case, well, in case the invention didn't work."
He sighed and looked up at the darkening sky.
"I don't remember the last thing I said to Sonny," he said quietly. "It must have been when we were in Madame Lulu's tent, or maybe outside, just before we stepped into the caravan. Had I known that Count Olaf was going to take her away, I would have tried to say something special. I could have complimented her on the hot chocolate she made, or told her how skillful she was at staying in disguise."
"You can tell her those things," Violet said, "when we see her again."
"I hope so," Klaus said glumly. "But we're so far behind Olaf and his troop."
"But we know where they're going," Violet said. "And we know that he won't harm a hair on her head."
Count Olaf thinks we've perished in the caravan, so he needs Sunny to get his hands on the fortune.
She's probably unharmed, Klaus agreed, but I'm sure she's very frightened.
I just hope she knows we're coming after her.
Me too, Violet said, and walked in a silence for a while, interrupted only by the wind and the odd gurgling noise of the fish.
I think those fish are having trouble breathing, Klaus said, pointing into the stream. Something in the water is making them cough.
Maybe the stricken stream isn't always that ugly colour, Violet said. What would turn normal water into greyish-black slime?
Iron ore, Klaus said thoughtfully, trying to remember a book on high-altitude environmentalism he had read when he was 10.
Or perhaps a clay deposit, loosened by an earthquake or another geological event, or some sort of pollution? There might be an ink or licorice factory nearby.
Maybe VFD will tell us, Violet said, when we reach the headquarters.
Maybe one of our parents will tell us, Klaus said quietly.
We shouldn't get our hopes up, Violet said. Even if one of our parents really did survive the fire, and the VFD headquarters really are at the Valley of Four Drafts, we still don't know that we will see them when we arrive.
I don't see the harm in getting our hopes up, Klaus said.
We're walking along a damaged stream towards a vicious villain in an attempt to rescue our sister and find the headquarters of a secret organization. I could use a little bit of hope right now.
Violet stopped in her path.
I could use another layer of clothing, she said. It's getting colder.
Klaus nodded in agreement and held up the garment he was carrying.
Do you want the poncho, he asked, or the sweatshirt?
The poncho, if you don't mind, Violet said. After my experience in the House of Freaks, I don't wish to advertise the Caligari Carnival.
Me neither, Klaus said, taking the lettered sweatshirt from his sister. I think I'll wear it inside out.
Rather than take off their coats and expose themselves to the icy winds of the Mortmain Mountains, Klaus put on the inside-out sweatshirt over his coat, and Violet wore the poncho outside hers, where it hung awkwardly around her. The two elder Baudelaires looked at one another and had to smile at their ridiculous appearance.
These are worse than the pinstripe suits Esme Squalor gave us, Violet said.
Or those itchy sweaters we wore when we stayed with Mr. Poe, Klaus said, referring to a banker who was in charge of the Baudelaire fortune, with whom they had lost touch.
But at least we'll keep warm. If it gets even colder, we can take turns wearing the extra coat.
If one of our parents is at the headquarters, Violet said, he or she might not recognize us underneath all this clothing. We'll look like two large lumps.
The two Baudelaires looked up at the snow-covered peaks above them and felt a bit dizzy, not only from the height of the Mortmain Mountains, but from all the questions buzzing around their heads. Could they really reach the Valley of Four Drafts all by themselves? What would the headquarters look like? Would VFD be expecting the Baudelaires? Would Count Olaf have reached the headquarters ahead of them? Would they find Sunny? Would they find one of their parents?
Violet and Klaus looked at one another in silence and shivered in their strange clothes, until finally Klaus broke the silence with one more question, which seemed the dizziest one of all.
Which parent, he said, do you think is the survivor?
Violet opened her mouth to answer, but at that moment another question immediately occupied the minds of the elder Baudelaires.
It is a dreadful question, and nearly everyone who has found themselves asking it has ended up wishing that they'd never brought up the subject. My brother asked the question once and had nightmares about it for weeks. An associate of mine asked the question and found himself falling through the air before he could hear the answer. It is a question I asked once, a very long time ago, and in a very timid voice, and a woman replied by quickly putting a motorcycle helmet on her head and wrapping her body in a red silk cape. The question is,
What in the world is that ominous-looking cloud of tiny white buzzing objects coming towards us? And I'm sorry to tell you that the answer is a swarm of well-organized, ill-tempered insects known as snow gnats, who live in cold mountain areas and enjoy stinging people for no reason whatsoever. What in the world, Violet said, is that ominous-looking cloud of tiny white buzzing objects coming towards us? Klaus looked in the direction his sister was pointing and frowned. I remember reading something in a book on mountainous insect life, he said, but I can't quite recall the details. Try to remember, Violet said, looking nervously at the approaching swarm. The ominous-looking cloud of tiny white buzzing objects had appeared from around a rocky corner, and from a distance it looked a bit like the beginnings of a snowfall. But now the snowfall was organizing itself into the shape of an arrow and moving toward the two children, buzzing louder and louder as if it were annoyed. I think they might be snow gnats, Klaus said. Snow gnats live in cold mountain areas and have been known to group themselves into well-defined shapes. Violet looked from the approaching arrow to the waters of the stream and the steep edge of the mountain peak. I'm glad gnats are harmless, she said. It doesn't look like there's any way to avoid them. There's something else about snow gnats, Klaus said, that I'm not quite remembering. The swarm drew quite close, with the tip of the fluttering white arrow just a few inches from the Baudelaire's noses, and then stopped in its path, buzzing angrily. The two siblings stood face to face with the snow gnats for a long, tense second, and the gnat at the very, very tip of the arrow flew daintily forward and stung Violet on the nose. Ow! Violet said. The snow gnat flew back to its place, and the eldest Baudelaire was left rubbing a tiny red mark on her nose. That hurt, she said. It feels like a pin stuck me. I remember now, Klaus said. Snow gnats are ill-tempered and enjoy stinging people for no reason whatso. But Klaus did not get to finish his sentence, because the snow gnats interrupted and gave a ghastly demonstration of just what he was talking about. Curling lazily in the mountain winds, the arrow twisted and became a large buzzing circle, and the gnats began to spin around and around the two Baudelaires like a well-organized and ill-tempered hula hoop. Each gnat was so tiny that the children could not see any of its features, but they felt as if the insects were smiling nastily. "Are the stings poisonous?" Violet asked. "Mildly," Klaus said. "We'll be all right if we get stung a few times, but many stings could make us very ill. Ow!" One of the gnats had flown up and stung Klaus on the cheek, as if it were seeing if the middle Baudelaire was fun to hurt. "People always say that if you don't bother stinging insects, they won't bother you," Violet said nervously. "Ow!" "That's scarcely ever true," Klaus said, "and it's certainly not true with snow gnats. Ow! Ow! Ow!" "What should be ow?" Violet half-asked. "I don't ow!" Klaus half-answered, but in moments the Baudelaires did not have time for even half a conversation. The circle of snow gnats began spinning faster and faster, and the insects spread themselves out so it looked as if the two siblings were in the middle of a tiny white tornado. Then, in a series of manoeuvres that must have taken a great deal of rehearsal, the gnats began stinging the Baudelaires first on one side and then on the other. Violet shrieked as several gnats stung her chin. Klaus shouted as a handful of gnats stung his left ear, and both Baudelaires cried out as they tried to wave the gnats away, only to feel the stingers all over their waving hands. The snow gnats stung to the left and stung to the right. They approached the Baudelaires from above, making the children duck, and then from below, making the children stand on tiptoe in an effort to avoid them, and all the while the swarm buzzed louder and louder, as if wishing to remind the Baudelaires how much fun the insects were having. Violet and Klaus closed their eyes and stood together, too scared to walk blindly and find themselves falling off a mountain peak or sinking into the waters of the stricken stream.
"Coat!" Klaus managed to shout, then spit out a gnat that had flown into his open mouth in the hopes of stinging his tongue. Violet understood at once and grabbed the extra coat in her hands and draped it over Klaus and herself like a large, limp umbrella of cloth. The snow gnats buzzed furiously, trying to get inside to continue stinging them, but had to settle for stinging the Baudelaire's hands as they held the coat in place. Violet and Klaus looked at one another dimly under the coat, wincing as their fingers were stung, and tried to keep walking.
"We'll never reach the Valley of Four Draughts like this,"
Violet said, speaking louder than usual over the buzzing of the gnats.
"How can we stop them, Klaus?"
"Fire drives them away," Klaus said. "In the book I read, the author said that even the smell of smoke can keep a whole swarm at bay, but we can't start a fire underneath a coat."
"Ow!"
A snow gnat stung Violet's thumb on a spot that had already been stung, just as the Baudelaires rounded the rocky corner where the swarm had first appeared. Through a worn spot in the fabric, the Baudelaires could just make out a dark, circular hole in the side of the mountain.
"That must be an entrance to one of the caves," Klaus said. "Could we start a fire in there?"
"Maybe,"
Violet said.
"And maybe we'd annoy a hibernating animal."
"We've already managed to annoy thousands of animals," Klaus said, almost dropping the pitcher as a gnat stung his wrist.
"I don't think we have much choice. I think we have to head into the cave and take our chances."
Violet nodded in agreement, but looked nervously at the entrance to the cave. Taking one's chances is like taking a bath, because sometimes you end up feeling comfortable and warm, and sometimes there is something terrible lurking around that you cannot see until it is too late, and you can do nothing else but scream and cling to a plastic duck. The two Baudelaires walked carefully toward the dark, circular hole, making sure to stay clear of the nearby edge of the peak, and pulling the coat tightly around them so the snow gnats could not find a way inside. But what worried them most was not the height of the peak or the stingers of the gnats, but the chances they were taking as they ducked inside the gloomy entrance of the cave. The two Baudelaires had never been in this cave before, of course, and as far as I've been able to ascertain, they were never in it again, even on their way back down the mountain, after they had been reunited with their baby sister and learned the secret a verbal fridge dialogue. And yet, as Violet and Klaus took their chances and walked inside, they found two things with which they were familiar. The first was fire. As they stood inside the entrance to the cave, the siblings realized at once that there was no need to worry about the snow gnats any longer, because they could smell nearby smoke and even see, at a great distance, small orange flames toward the back of the cave. Fire, of course, was very familiar to the children, from the ashen smell of the remains of the Baudelaire mansion to the scent of the flames that destroyed Caligari Carnival. But as the snow gnats formed an arrow and darted away from the cave, and the Baudelaires took another step inside, Violet and Klaus found another familiar thing, a familiar person, to be exact, who they had thought they would never see again.
"Hey, you cake sniffers,"
said a voice from the back of the cave, and the sound was almost enough to make the two Baudelaires wish they had taken their chances someplace else.
How do you slow this thing down?